Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 544. I'm in the car with Matt Myra right now.
Maybe turn the air conditioning off. It's 97 degrees. That's literal 97 degrees.
Well,
it was 104.
I've never heard anyone say figurative 97 degrees.
Well, what about the band 98 degrees?
Well, they were literal and figurative 98 degrees.
But be another one like that.
Now you're just talking about the temperature.
Yeah.
I swear.
You know?
That is really fucking hot in this car.
Because the air conditioning.
I swear. I'm making it longer to choke you out. Matt Myra. Oh,
I like that touch. That's nice.
Beads of sweat are pooling on your forehead now.
Not yet. Almost.
Really. Wipe it off with your Dodgers cap. You got Red Sox cap in the backseat that's waiting to get filled with your sweat.
Forgot about
Don't
that.
Forget. Yeah, I swear.
Oh, God.
It's getting hotter in this fucking car. All right, now I'm starting to suffer.
It's 3 hours of this so far.
By the way, if you want more of this, come see us at the Nerdist Podcast live at San Diego Comic-Con. We added a second show. The other ones are sold out. 7:30 p.m. There are tickets available Saturday, July 26th. That is coming up pretty soon. Coming up pretty soon. I'd like to thank for sponsoring this episode of the World of the Nerds Podcast, World of Tanks Blitz.
World of Tanks Blitz!
It's a mobile version of the award-winning MMO action game, which, by the way, has 85 million people worldwide. Draws inspiration from the PC version. World of Tanks is built specifically for optimal online mobile gameplay, and it's currently available on iPhone and iPad. The reviews are great. It's a 4.5 out of 5 stars in the App Store.
That's almost the most stars you can get.
There's an impressive roster of over 90 massive tanks. Short action pack, 7v7 tank battles, stunning graphics.
Whoa, I can have 14 people battling in tanks?
Matt.
On a phone?
You sure listen good. If you would like to test it out, go to wotblitz.com/nerdist. That's wotblitz.com/nerdist to try it out. And it's out now. It's already launched. So what are you waiting for? I mean, until after this podcast.
Get it. You can play it while you're listening.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, you really could.
Do both.
So that's World of Tanks Blitz. Available right now. Thanks for sponsoring this episode of Nerdist Podcast, which is Jessica Chobot.
Chobot.
My dear friend from the G4 days.
I'm sorry.
I know you were writing stuff for another TV show that I work on. Chobot's promoting Nerdist News, which you should totally watch. Go to Nerdist.com. It's 5 days a week. She's fantastic. If you miss G4 at all, gives you a nice sliver of that. And also, she has a new podcast, which was originally called Spooky Shit, but they just changed the name to Bizarre States. Because maybe having shit in the title of your podcast is not so great for iTunes and whatnot. So it's called Bizarre States, and it's great. So here we go. Jessica's super cool, and I also adore her husband, Blair Herder, who is a wonderful man, who does make somewhat of a cameo in this podcast. So listen for it.
How'd that happen? I don't want to know. Don't spoil it.
All right.
Just let them listen.
Here we go, the Nerdist Podcast, number 544, with Jessica Chobot.
Air conditioning!
No, don't turn it on! Oh, I was such a fool. Oh, that's real nice.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
You have mommy brain right now.
Dude, I always have mommy brain. It's like a never ending. It's a curse. I never had very good memory to start off with, and it is just really taking a dive after
I'm
the kid.
Directly across from you.
Okay.
So you don't have to tilt your head.
Well, this chair is a little higher up. This one's kind of nice. How do we sound, Katie?
Great.
Jessica Chobot.
Let me put this here so that it doesn't rattle on the table. It's professionalism.
Host of Nerdist News.
Let me make sure that I actually have it on silent. Yes.
Silent but deadly. So you, I wasn't going anywhere with that. I just wanted to have you kind of need, in order to activate a joke, sometimes you need, you need a segue that doesn't go anywhere. So I would have to say like, oh, I took a shower today. So what is your, I don't have anywhere to go with that. It's just
a throw out.
It's just, yeah, it's basically, you just need a little chaff at the end to activate the joke in a weird way. How's Blair Herter, first of all, because your husband is a wonderful man. And
he's good. He actually just had his birthday on Monday.
He did?
Yeah. He's all of... the fuck? 30-something?
Yeah. He's in there somewhere. He's good. You just mouthed, I don't know. You could look your husband up on IMDb.
Yet?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seriously?
He's not going to listen.
Yeah, he will.
Oh, shit.
Chris, God damn it, he just got me divorced.
Look him up. He's going to divorce you because you don't know how old he is.
I want to say 34.
Is he 34?
I'm going to say 34.
Katie Levine's looking it up.
We went to Raging Waters for his birthday. It was actually really awesome. I haven't been to a water...
Of course it's awesome.
Well, no, I haven't... Yeah! See, I knew. I just got scared. I have not been to a water park since I lived in Michigan, and we used to go to like Wisconsin... like Noah's Ark and all that crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So what was that? Wisconsin Dells. It's like a whole city dedicated to water parks. It is the best shit ever.
I went to a water park with a bunch of businessmen peeing on me. So you have a new...
I got it. Yeah, I got it. Exactly. I'm learning.
So I don't really know that... I knew you from G4, but not well. Mm-hmm. And I know you had a history with IGN and G4 and all sorts of... But where are you from...
kind of all over East Coast, Midwest, pretty much like Buffalo, New York, basically all the cold places you don't want to live because it's freezing there.
Oh, your parents were ice chasers.
Dad worked in cars, and so that just eventually ended up in Detroit. We never went too far from the Canadian border. So, except for one time, we ended up moving to Virginia, of all places. But then most of it's been like Buffalo, New York, Michigan, Chicago. I went to school in Ohio. Moved out here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been it.
And how long have you been out here?
I've been out here for about 7 years.
7 years.
Yeah, I think we're going on 7 years now.
And
yeah.
So how did you get hooked up with G4?
G4 was... It kind of was just like out of the blue, random. I had run into Erica at an event once, and she said, oh, get in contact with me. We're always looking
Erica
for
Lewis,
a host.
One
Erica
of the
Lewis.
Big, yeah, one of the...
And, I mean, at that point, G4 had known me from just IGN, because a lot of times they would call for people to be guests on Attack of the Show or X-Play, and so we'd come on, correspondent IGN person. And so that was a little bit of that. And then I ran into Erica Lewis, and at the same time was dating Blair. And so I started hanging out with everybody at G4 through Blair and became friends with them. And then at the time I was living in San Francisco, Blair lived in LA. So we were having basically, I guess you'd call it a long distance relationship. It was not terrible because we'd always run into each other at the same events and we're only, an hour and a half flight away. But, eventually we knew we wanted to get married and all that jazz and make it legal, I guess. And so I actually didn't want to get married. I wanted to keep it.
See, that's why he might leave you.
Yeah. No, he knows. Okay. But and it was the best decision I ever made to get married. So, I started hitting up G4 for more work because I wanted to move back down to LA so that we could be together and move in together.
That's nice.
Get married.
Now, I know I told you this story, but just the listeners don't know that I technically feel you've kind of owe me your family it's because of me.
Oh yeah, what was that? What was the connection again?
Here's the story. I enjoy the story because a family emerged from it.
How was this? I know
your
you
husband
told me.
And your child. Now, I don't mean to sound like Rumpelstiltskin, but you owe them to me.
Well, we're hitting terrible too, so you're more than effing welcome to have him.
I'll just take Blair. You keep the baby. The story is that a handful of years ago, what year was it that you and Blair met? Around 08?
Something like that, okay. Yeah.
So I was at Attack of the Show for just about a year, maybe a little less than a year, and then I get this call to host a series of events based around the tequila.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Where basically the idea was you and a co-host will go around to all these bars and play and do bar games based on a tequila. You know, sponsored by, you know, like you'd show up in a bar somewhere in the middle of the country and be like, hey, we're going to play some games here at the bar, which people love to do at bars. They love when all the action is halted and they have to focus on something. Sponsored by whatever it is. I don't remember what the...
It was Jose Cuervo.
Jose Cuervo. Okay. If I had just thrown out any tequila, it probably would have been that one. But it's been a long time. So I said, my response was, I cannot do that because I feel weird about it because I'm a sober person. Mm-hmm. And so I feel weird working for a liquor company.
So you volunteer, Blair.
going to bars. Yeah. So I can't do it. And so so Blair ended up doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Blair met you.
Yeah.
And you guys started up a thing.
Yeah, we
so that's my baby.
It is your baby.
No. I do have to claim some responsibility.
It's totally true. You are the butterfly that flapped its wings and caused a tornado.
I did.
It happened over in Michigan, apparently. It was really weird. When I first met Blair, so we went on that thing, and I was like, oh, here's a nice guy, and I instantly didn't like him, because he was such a nice guy, because I automatically suspect people that are too nice straight out the gate. I'm like, oh, what's your angle? Like, nobody's this nice. This is irritating. That's just my really sunny outlook on life.
Yeah.
And but he was persistent and eventually wore me down. I think it was he ended up...
Do you hold up a boombox outside your bedroom window?
No, well, he kind of would say things like, oh, this is so inappropriate. But he would say things like, I'm going to fuck you. and I'd be like, no, you're not. And he'd be like, yeah, I totally am. I'm like, whatever, dude. Not in a million years. Like, you're not that special. And blah, blah, blah. And we'd go back and forth like that all the time.
Not in a million years, like a month.
Like, it took longer than a month.
Okay,
all right. It took longer than a month. We were actually at the time... Well, he was just blowing his seat in the wind constantly, but I was actually dating a guy. And so I didn't want to cheat on this guy.
I never thought to jerk off into the wind. That's such a great idea. Just as long as you're faced the right way. You want the tailwind. You don't want the headwind.
Yeah, you don't want it bouncing back. So he was just doing his thing. I was totally just in a relationship, but I knew I was on my way out. I didn't know if I wanted to date again, blah, 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 blah. And so then he just kept on like persisting and persisting and persisting. So we actually didn't officially start dating until I split up with the other guy.
Very respectful.
Yeah. But, and that was like the first time I actually felt like an adult, like in a relationship. I sat the guy down. I was like, listen, I don't mean to be a dick. I've fallen in love with somebody. I'm sorry it's not you, but I think this is over. I'd love to stay, you know, acquaintances or friends or just be on a friendly level, but that's the situation. And just so you know, I didn't cheat on you, but I'm going to have to say goodbye. Like, it was so mature. It was so mature. And he literally was like, oh, well, that sucks, but I understand. And it was like, yeah. And we actually still talk. Like, we still, like, I run into him sometimes and we're still totally cool.
Well, I remember when I turned down the job, I said, there's the alcohol thing because I'm sober, but I feel cosmically like there's a greater reason. I feel like somehow... alcohol is going to make a baby and not in the typical way. It's going to be in a very circuitous way. It's a very circuitous way. But then ultimately that's what's destined to happen. So I really felt at the time like I was making an important choice.
Mm-hmm.
So
the Herder family name lives on due to you.
I know. Well, I was tired of standing downwind from Blair. Come on, guys. That was a good joke.
Yeah, he used to bang tons of girls on that during that event. And we would know. I mean, I didn't have a problem with it because I wasn't dating him and I wasn't really terribly interested. And then finally one day I was just like, you know what? Fine. We are going to fuck. And I'm going to prove to you, mister, that you made the right decision. So yeah. So that's where we are now.
Good. Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
And now one baby later.
Yeah.
So you must be anxious to have like 4, 5, 6 more, right?
Hells no. I actually had a really hard time with having the baby. Combination of just stress in general. Well, one, just the changes in general. Like, I just wasn't... I don't want to say I wasn't prepared, but I didn't expect to, like, everybody's like, oh, baby, and they're rubbing their tummies, and I never had any of that. I wasn't like, oh, I never talked to him that much. I mean, I would occasionally, but not really, and I felt like kind of a disconnect.
Yeah, well, the major pregnant. Change being that a human being shoots out of your pussy. I mean, like, that's
well,
probably the biggest.
Well, mine did not shoot out of my pussy. Mine was actually torn from me from my womb through an incision.
No.
Yes, and that was terrifying. That is easily the scariest thing I'd ever done. In fact, it got to the point where the anesthesiologist, because you're awake. But the anesthesiologist is like, you cool? And I'm like, no, I'm not fucking cool. Just crank it. And he's like, I'm going to give you a little bit more. You're a little stressed. I'm like, ah.
Does it help?
It did.
Don't they
no.
have to lift your organs out and then get to the baby and then put your organs back
I
in?
I don't know. I've heard that. So for one, I can't see anything. There's a sheet there.
It's probably better.
I've been told they don't. They actually just move them aside and then pull the baby out and then put the organs back. Yeah. But I've also had people say, oh, they take them out and put them on a table and take your baby and then put it back in. At one point, and I hope he's joking, but my doctor, who we became friends with, was like, I've got my hand on your aorta. I'm like squeezing your heart muscle. Can you feel it? I'm like, no, I can't. Fucking stop talking to me. And so
not a good
really
time
awful.
For levity.
Yeah.
Not a good time for
I'm like, no,
a heart squeezing joke.
And he's like, what kind of music you want to listen to? I'm like, shut the fuck up. That's what I want to listen to. And so I didn't have a good time as far as like the whole lovey-dovey mother thing has been really hard. I didn't really start getting hardcore into it. Like, until he turned 6 months. No, but I'm serious because up until that point, he's just this blob, this needy blob that, I mean, at one point, no shit, Chris, there was a time. So, you know, to go back to what I was kind of talking about before, G4 goes under, you know, we just bought a house. We spent all our money on a down payment. You know, IGN, I leave, I'm back, you know, now I've just had this baby, I'm feeling fat, I have cankles, like everything's awful. I've got this little baby that I don't know how to take care of. I'm feeling really fucked up. Blair just started a new job, so he's never home to help. Not on purpose, he just has to be at work. So it's literally just me and this baby in pain in this house for like months. And at one point, I remember Blair had texted me something, and I was like in a cranky mood, so I texted him something shitty back. So then I started getting all these crazy texts in return. And at the same time that was happening, no joke, because you never know what was going to happen, but I started my period. And at the same time that was happening, so I'm literally standing at the changing table, my baby's on the changing table, and he shits into both my hands. So the phone's going berserk. My husband's like getting mad that I'm like not answering him because he thinks I'm mad at him. I've got baby shit in both my hands, and then I'm bleeding all over the floor and down my leg. And I was like, fuck this shit. Fuck all of this. Fuck y'all. I just put the baby in the crib. I scraped my hands off, and I just sat in a corner and bled out and cried for like hours. And I was like, I hate this.
Teach
and then
the children
well. Yeah. Nobody tells you this shit, though. Nobody tells you. Everybody's like, oh, it's going to be so wonderful. And it's like...
You weren't expecting shit hands and period feet.
No! No, I was not. But now, once he turned 6 months and he stopped being this, like, amorphous blob and started, like, smiling and laughing and being awesome, it's, like, really, really cool now. And each month he gets better. Until he probably turns 13 and then it's going to suck again until he turns, hopefully it won't be too bad.
How are you texting with shit hands?
Oh, well, at that point, I had given it up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was like, no. Because that's the one thing that you always keep in the back of your mind. I don't want to ruin my device.
No, you don't want to ruin your device.
No matter how fucked up your life's going on right then, you're just like, I'm not touching that because I don't want to ruin my device.
And of course, Blair's probably thinking like, oh, she's mad. She's not responding. And the thought is never crossing his mind like her hands are full of poop and she's standing in a pool of blood.
Yeah. Vaginal blood. Yeah. It's not, none of that probably crossed his mind. But yeah, I'm not in any hurry. Maybe we'll have one more. I don't know. We'll see. Right now, I just want to enjoy just actually enjoying my kid.
It's funny to hear you talk about that part of it. I'm sure it's not fun to go through, but I think it's fun for people who might be suffering from depression and like, why isn't it this thing that everyone's supposed to be so, and been realizing like, no, these are the real actual human things that people have to go through.
Oh yeah, totally.
But some people really do love it. I think
absolutely.
Some people
and
love
I
it,
was
so.
Very, and I'm very, to this day, very jealous of those people. I'm very disappointed that I spent the first 6 months feeling the way that I did, but there was nothing that I could do. I mean, I went to therapy. I tried to go, I did the postpartum therapy and all of it, and now I'm fine, but you know, the lack of sleep and not the additional stresses that were happening on and going on in our life and all that jazz. It was just like, this sucks. Like, that's it, plain and simple. I just couldn't change it up.
So how did you guys keep it? How did you keep everything okay? Was it just because, well, we got it, we have to?
You just have to. There's there is, I think, some sort of instinct that keeps you from, I mean, obviously there's, in the really bad cases, it fails. And so if you're that miserable, you should definitely check yourself into something or something. But for me, there was always an instinct to just get through it. Like, I just got to get through it. I just got to, you know, like, don't hurt the baby. Don't hurt yourself. Don't hurt your husband. Just keep your head down. Barrel through this. It's going to get better. You know, and I'd call my mom or I'd call my grandmother or whatever. Or I'd call my therapist and they'd be like, just, it's fine. You just got to get through this a little bit. And it did. It started turning around. A big part of it, oddly enough, and this is not to blow smoke up your ass, is when I started working for Nerdist.
Yeah.
Because it gave me it reminded me that, you know, I love work. I think I'd go crazy if I wasn't working. And it reminded me that, okay, you can always go back to your job, just because you're never going to be, I think my knee jerk reaction is always to be fearful of being that like stay at home mom. Not that there's anything wrong with it. It's just not my cup of tea. I like to work. And I was feeling really paranoid that maybe because of the way that things have happened with G4 and IGN and now being pregnant and having the baby, like I was going to be forced into that role just because that's how life worked out for me. And so getting on board and actually working and doing other jobs finally after like about 6 months really set me in the right headspace.
I remember running into you before we hired you and you're like, I'll come do whatever. I just got to get out of the fucking house.
I'm like, please, dude, anything. I will fucking make your coffee. Just get me out of the goddamn house. I need like 10 minutes of just being an adult again, like my own adult again. And but so things have been really good.
Well, you instantly like, you're such the perfect choice for that show. It's so,
thanks.
I can't imagine it. I can't imagine anyone else doing it because it's, you know, you had all this experience and it just, you obviously had a lot of time to develop your voice, but you obviously came in funny. Like what was your background? Like before you started doing IGN, what were you doing before?
I was actually, working as a real estate secretary and also then quit that in a fit of what I called my quarter life crisis, and then was a key holder at EB Games. And that's what I did. I mean, I graduated with a fine arts degree, which gets you jack and shit in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And so then I was going to go to school again while I was working as a secretary for a art education degree for secondary courses. That basically means like high school and up or middle school and up.
Yep.
And so I was back in college. I had gotten married. So I'd been married before. Blair's not my first husband.
Does he know this?
He does. Okay, he does. And didn't like being married. And, you know, I got married too young. I think it was that my parents actually have a great marriage. I've seen that growing up. They still love each other. It's their first marriage. It's awesome. And I think that, you know, that and the white picket fence and that American dream and told as long as you keep going to school and getting good grades, there's going to be a job for you. But by the time I got to that point, one, I chose not the wrong path, but a hard path to monetize in a real world scenario. And as far as fine art. And then on top of it, you know, I think I've probably rushed into a marriage because I felt like that's what you're supposed to do. Once you graduate college, you get married. And I really did love the guy, but you know, it just was too young to be married. I would think I was like 25, 26, which I at the time felt and still feel was too young for me. So, I kind of said, fuck it to all of that, quit school, I hadn't gotten divorced yet, but I basically had moved down to our finished basement. We kind of lived two separate lifestyles. Got a job at EB Games, found out about E3 that year, made fake business cards and a fake pay stub and snuck into E3 ran into G4 and ran into IGN and kind of forced IGN to give me a job. And IGN offered and said, well, do you want to move? We need you to move out to California. I'm like, yeah, sounds good. They're like, but you're married. I'm like, yeah, sounds good. and so I told my husband at the time, I'm like, listen, at this point, the good thing was, it was a amicable divorce. You know, both sides, I think both of us were like, this isn't working. So So I just told him, I'm like, listen, if you want to stay married, you know, if you force me to stay here, it's not going to work out. It's just not. If you give me the chance to leave, we'll see how we are in like 4 months if I miss you or not. And then I'll either move you out there because Michigan didn't have anything for him, or we'll split. And so that's what we did. And 4 months in, I was just like, nah, this is not, I don't miss you. I'm sorry. You know, like, you're a great guy, but I don't miss you. And I think we should get a divorce. And we did. And that was it. I just said, keep all your stuff. I'll just keep what I have out here. We didn't have kids, so it wasn't messy. So it was a nice even just split. And that was it.
How long were you married?
Well, I was married for about 2.5 years, but we had been together for probably about 4 or 5, including the 2 years that we were together.
Oh, okay.
2 years that we were married.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was a decent relationship.
Yeah.
Length of time, I guess. So it wasn't like a rush job or anything.
Well, how long were you guys living separately, basically?
Just the 4 months when I had moved out.
No, I mean like when you were living in the basement.
Oh, no, we were, for that, probably like the last year or a year and a half.
So by that point, it was like.
It's a pretty fuzzy. I'm pretty sure I've mentally forgotten.
Oh, it'll come out later somehow.
But no, probably like a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So are you, and were you playing video games this entire time?
Oh, yeah. I've been playing video games since Atari 2600 days. So I went through a phase. I went through hardcore, like growing up kid, play Atari, NES, SNES. The big reason I think that I got so into it was my dad traveled a lot for work. And so when he would come home, he would play video games with us. And it was like a big deal, not just because dad's hanging out with us, who we very rarely got because he was always gone, but also dad's hanging out with us doing things that we thought were cool, not just what the adults thought were cool. He thought that what we were doing was awesome. So that made it extra special. So then I got really kind of involved in games that way, and definitely had friends because they had Segas or NESs. That was the only reason they were my friends. I'm like, let's go play on, you know, I think I remember Chivalry on a Macintosh that my friend had, and I was like, we're gonna play Chivalry. She's like, now I want to play Barbies. I'm like, fine, let's play Barbies for like 10 minutes and then can we play Chivalry? You know, like, she'd be like, my brother plays it all the time. I'm like, God, I wish your brother was my friend. And so that was kind of what we did there. And then when I hit high school to about early college, I kind of stopped playing games. It just fell off the map. You know, I have no reason why. I turned goth. That was part of the reason.
I saw the picture.
Oh, yeah.
The picture was great.
Oh, that's not even half of it.
I feel like we should put one of those pictures up on this post. Would you be willing to do that?
Okay. Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's only that one in existence because my mom threatened to keep them all, and I found the stash and tore them all up so she couldn't use it as blackmail, but I did keep one for posterity, and that's the one.
Oh, so, goth pictures, the blackest blackmail.
Oh, it is. It is. Yeah, it is exactly that. And but now I'm like, whatever. It was awesome. So then I kind of got all goth and weird. And well, I did get into Vampire the Masquerade LARPing and a little bit of the tabletop, but most of the live action. And then how I got back into games was with Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. I went home for Christmas and my brother had an N64 and he had gotten Legend of Zelda for Christmas.
Yeah.
And so I just pretty much commandeered that and played it the entire Christmas break to the point where I got in some serious trouble by my parents.
Because
I was not, I was not doing the fam jam.
Yeah,
so
but didn't they know the game you were playing was really fun?
No, and I kept trying. My dad was a little bit more sympathetic because my dad actually does play video games. And so my dad was, you know, he in between my bouts of Ocarina, he'd be like, I want to play some GoldenEye? Your mom's not here. And I'm like, yeah, dad, let's get on it. And so, and then the Star Wars game, but I can't remember which one.
Rogue Squadron.
Yeah, I think that's the one. So he would play that, and then we would fight over Ocarina and Star Wars because he wanted to get on the Star Wars. And then the bridge of that gap would be GoldenEye. And so he was more sympathetic, but my mom was absolutely pissed. And my grandmother was very hurt. Very,
I'm sure you
very
heard all
hurt.
About it.
Yes, I heard plenty about it. And then from there, though, that kind of kickstarted my obsession with gaming again. And that was kind of where I started getting really, really into it all over again. The best, actually. So my first husband, don't ever do this to your girlfriends or wives, guys, because this is bad news. My first husband had said to me, what do you want for Valentine's Day? And I'm like, I don't know, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, what do you want? He's like, well, I'll be honest. If you got me this golf club, which was like this really expensive golf club, he's like, I wouldn't be upset. And I'm like, all right, I'll get you that golf club if you get me a PlayStation. And he's like, okay, deal. And I'm like, because, you know, at that point, there's not really surprises. You're married. It was whatever. You want to get what you want to get. So I'm like, okay, sweet. Well, I get the golf club. I give it to him. He's like, thank you so much. Oh my God, blah, 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 I love you. Blah. He gives me a bag of Godiva chocolates and a white teddy from Victoria's Secrets.
Well,
I'm like,
you should.
This is bullshit. And I made him take it back.
This is. You should have just left him right there.
I know. Well, that was the first, like, major red flag.
To be
flag.
Fair, maybe in his mind, a white teddy was his definition of a PlayStation.
Well, if for him, yeah. But for me, no. And so I was super, super pissed. I made him take it back, and we got my PlayStation that day.
He didn't even listen to you.
So angry. Well, he didn't, which was, that was kind of the ongoing theme. So, yeah, no longer.
Get your wife a PlayStation.
If she asks for a PlayStation.
She's going to leave you.
Yes.
Don't. That's so fucked up. You gave him a present for him, and he gave you a present for him.
Exactly. Exactly. So there's a reason why there was a divorce.
That's bullshit. Listen to your significant others. Don't be a creepy stalker, but take notes. Take mental notes.
Oh, yeah.
What do they do during the day? What types of things are they interested in?
If they blatantly say they want an Xbox One or a PS4, maybe that's your hint.
That's another clue. That might hold the key to something that they would enjoy.
That tight vagina that hasn't been ruined by popping out a kid yet. That's what happens.
If you get the PlayStation, you'll get more of that. Even if it's a selfish reason.
If you get an Xbox One and a PS4, maybe you'll get anal. Who's to say?
What? PS4 play. Come on. Sorry, I had to hop top.
Nice. Kyle. Is that a thing?
Oh, yeah, I did it the wrong way. PS4 play. So you once told me that... Yeah, I don't know what my I don't even know what my opinions are on anal. Like, it's more of a funny punchline than actual thing that I've ever really sat down and been like, oh yeah, that.
Yep.
You once mentioned in passing.
That being said, I just want to clear the air. I have not done anal, and this is why. Because the guy that finally sticks it in your butt will always know that he was that guy that stuck it in your butt.
But I feel
like that is not... I don't want that guy.
If you're married to someone, I mean, like, it's okay to give that guy the distinction.
I don't think so.
Blair, I'm trying to help you out. Blair, I know you're listening to this. I know right now your fingers are crossed.
Right now, he's like, come on.
Come on, please. I'll get her a PlayStation. I'll get her all the PlayStations.
You got me the vagina, Chris. Get me the butt.
That'd be a weird text to get from Blair all of a sudden. Hey, bro, you got me the vagina. Get me the butt.
Guess what I'm going to tell him to text you in about a year. I'm going to wait till you forget. I'm going to wait till you forget.
It's going to take you 12 months to warm up to the idea.
And then I'm just going to be like, hey, remember that time? Put it in your calendar right now, honey. Yeah.
That's really funny.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like it's like an ego thing. I can't let somebody know that they had that one up on me.
Right.
Here's the deal. You want to stick it in my butt? Fine, but then I get to put on a strap-on, stick it up in your butt.
Okay. That's a fair trade.
I feel like that's a fair trade.
But then if the guy comes too hard, then you're like, "Oh, we should have a discussion."
Well, at that point, I'm like, listen, if this is what gets you off, me sticking it up your butt, then that's cool. Like, if that's what you want, fine. I don't care.
Blair just put his hand to his head and I'm like, God damn it. How much do I want? Or maybe he'd be like, finally.
Yeah.
I don't know Blair that well.
Apparently, I don't either.
So once you've had a kid, what happens to, I mean, obviously sex evolves. Mm-hmm. I would assume. You don't have to talk about it.
I don't know if it evolves. I don't care.
Oh, okay.
I mean, everybody has sex.
No, I know, but I mean, is it...
The lucky ones. Well, I can think of a couple of people that I know that probably aren't getting any, but...
But I just mean in terms of, like, you know, when your energy's been tapped all day with work and then your energy's been tapped with baby time.
Yeah.
How are you like, I can't wait to...
That's probably my biggest struggle is just exhaustion. It's not that I don't find my husband attractive. I think my husband is incredibly hot.
He's very handsome.
He's super handsome. He's super handsome. He's super funny. He's super alluring. Like there's none of that is faded. I'm just fucking exhausted.
Yeah.
And I'm at this stage with the baby now where the baby's like separation anxiety. So even if Blair can handle the job, like change the diaper or get him dressed or whatever, the kid's throwing such a fit because he wants mommy, 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 mommy.
Yeah.
You know, that I can't get the help even if I want it. It's just, Emerson's just demanding my time.
What happens? I don't even know. Is it weird? Do parents have sex like with the baby in a crib in the corner of the room, or is that just weird?
Well, one thing we never did is we never let him sleep in the bed with us. We never co-slept. So he's always been in his crib in his own room.
That was absolutely by design. So he doesn't think like, oh, I should go in the bed whenever.
Yeah. And so that was a line that I was not going to have crossed. And so, we went through a really hard phase of sleep training him, but now he's good. And so we shut the door and I do my Tomodachi life on my DS and Blair reads a couple comics and then we bang it out. And then we go to bed. And then we start it again the next day.
It's a couple comics. All right, let's do this.
We're gonna do this.
Good night.
But it has. I mean, it has taken a hit, but I think it's on the upswing.
Good.
Because now we are getting full night's sleep, so we're not as exhausted, and we have a full time babysitter because we both work. So even though it's work and you're still doing stuff, you're with adults. You're not with this irrational child, so you're not as like banging your head against that wall.
Sure.
So a lot of that stress is gone, and so yeah, it's changing. It's getting better.
Well, that's cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just not really knowing. I mean, like people, you know, because there's some people that are just like, we got to have a kid every other year. We'll get to two or three.
And then we're done.
And then we're done. But do you feel like one and done?
I don't feel one and done. I feel one and maybe. Mm-hmm. I'm not completely sold on not having another. I'm not completely sold on having only Emerson. I'd like to have a little girl, if nothing because of the adorable clothes you can stick them in. It's like having a pet.
They can't stop you. You're stronger than they are.
You want frills? You're getting frills.
No!
but I've also really seriously considered adoption. I did not like being pregnant, and I had a really hard time with the first 6 months, so I don't want to risk losing that time with my baby again. Mm-hmm. And I feel the thing that kind of also gave me the idea of adopting is that when we went home to Blair's parents' house in Louisiana, we went out to eat. There was this couple behind us with like really three really adorable kids, like super well behaved, super cute, super like the family just loved each other. You can tell. And Blair, who can make friends with the wall, started talking to them, and they let it be known to us that they were foster kids, that those were their foster kids. They were the foster parents. And I just thought, oh God, like these three kids, like I hope that they're, I don't really know if this is correct or not, but I think foster just means you're fostering them until somebody else adopts them.
You could have just taken one right there, I think. Is that how that works?
I don't know, but I was just thinking,
claim one,
like,
claimed?
Dibs!
Oh, you called it.
But what if, I thought, what if that's not the case? Like, what if they do get split up? That's going to be heartbreaking. And like, what if one of these kids who's so happy now ends up going to a shitty home? And then I thought, oh, well, there's so many kids that, oh my God, I think I might cry. There's so many. Ooh, I've got mommy.
That's so sweet.
No, Chris, this is awful.
A second ago, you had shit in your hands and period stuff.
Oh no, my God,
you're
this
making
is
dick jokes, and now you're talking about kids.
I mean, it's bipolar all over the place.
This is the wonderful package that is Jessica Chobot.
Yeah,
dick jokes 1 minute, crying for foster children.
For foster kids the next. But yeah. I did. I was like, oh, that really sucks. So maybe we'll adopt.
Oh God.
Mm-hmm.
You know what you did? You just gave this podcast a soul. A second ago, we were discussing.
Did you want me to take it away? Because I can tell you about the awful fight I got within my neighbor yesterday.
Yes, tell me about your neighbor fight.
All right, so we live right next to a park, and so one of my big problems, I still go to my therapist, not because of the depression, but because of anxiety now in regards to mommy bear. I'm super mommy bear, like Kill Bill mommy bear style. And we have this park that we live by that they've been renovating because the grass gotten torn up, blah, 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 blah. So they have it all cordoned off with this fence. Well, the local kids, I mean, the fence has been up for like 6 months. All the grass is back. So everybody's wanting to get in, and some of the local kids like tore down some of the fence and people go in and use it. So we were hanging out there and I'm like, you know what? I just want my kid to roam free. I'm going to bring him over there. I'm going to let him run across the field. I'm not going to worry about having him run into the street. Like, this is good. I can just like kind of relax because I'm always worried he's going to hurt himself. So I put him in there. It's Blair and myself and Blair's brother. And this guy comes over to us and he's like, you guys can't be in here. And I instantly was like, and who the fuck are you?
Whoa!
And he goes, I'm part of the neighborhood watch. And I'm like, sweet. Well, you can watch me enjoy my neighborhood because I live right fucking there and I'm going to use this goddamn park. And we got into it. I'm like, yo, why don't you call the cops? I went crazy. Blair's like, babe, come on. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm not going to let my kid roam free.
Why are you not supposed to be in the park?
I don't know. So when we first moved there, the park had been torn up because a lot of people were playing soccer there, like illegal, I guess, quote unquote, illegal organized soccer matches.
Oh, yeah. It's very illegal here in this country.
Well, they were using the cleats.
Oh.
So they were tearing up all the grass. So everybody else, all the neighbors.
Organized soccer? Yeah, you can't.
Yeah. All the neighbors were really pissed because nobody could. I mean, it's a huge section that nobody could play in.
But you guys were not playing soccer at the time.
No. And so I guess the city, people complained enough that the city came in, they put up the fence, and they resodded everything and put in a couple whatever, like made it nice, you know, and all the grass is now grown back, and they just haven't torn down the fence yet. And so I don't know why that is. We're still not allowed in there. Unless they're hiding bodies or something, but I checked. I didn't see any.
Okay, so except for the person, that guy that you murdered.
Except for the one that I threatened life and said.
So how did this shake out?
It eventually became Blair dragging me back to the house while I screamed, fuck you, old man. I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want, and him calling me a bitch. To which I said, shut the fuck up, I know where you live.
Just knowing Blair.
Yeah.
Come on.
That's exactly what he said.
Please.
That's exactly the face he made. Babe, come on, babe. Come on, babe.
It doesn't have to.
This is ridiculous.
I mean, come on.
And in hindsight, yes, I was a complete ass master. But man, it means for a good story, and I felt really good yelling at him. Really, really good.
So, what is your day like when you, like, how do you build, when you do Nerdist News, now that you're doing it almost every day, like, what is your day consist of? Since I'm not actually there watching you do it, because that'd be weird.
Well, so I like to text Mike Shaw on my way in. Mike, who's the, I guess, executive producer of the show.
Producer on Attack of the Show.
Yeah. I like to text him on the way in saying I'm not coming in just to fuck with him. Mm-hmm. And then he panics for like 3 seconds. And then I go, ha, 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 I'm on my way in. Do you guys want coffee? And then I get there and, you know, I kind of like get ready with makeup and the hair and all that jazz. The writers kind of piece down the stories. Then we all go over it in the prompter and shoot it. It's really quick, actually. And
that's it.
And then we, toss some improv lines in there and we're good to go.
How was your E3?
E3 was fun. In fact, I've been pushing to cover more game stuff. I mean, because of the games background that I have, it's like my big passion. So, hey, Chris, can we cover more game stuff?
Let me check with my boss. Oh, that's me. Sure.
It was really nice. You know, it was cool to be able to see more of E3 for a change. Like before, I'd always get assigned E3 events from G4. Yeah. I think last year I covered it for Microsoft, so I only got to really see and cover Microsoft stuff. So I hadn't gone and enjoyed an E3 in a long time. And even though I was kind of locked into our booth for a good chunk of the day, I got to go to all the press conference. I got, you know, what it really boils down to, I got to have an opinion on things. Whereas before I used to just be able to read the script.
Yeah.
Or
at G4.
At G4 and IGN.
Because you're just making announcements, basically.
Yeah, I was just kind of regurgitating information, both for IGN and G4. They were both kind of set up like that for me. And so this is, and not only just for the E3 coverage, but most of the coverage that I do for Nerdist Now, including Nerdist News and anything else I've been doing, which is the podcast we're launching on Thursday.
Yeah.
Spooky shit, y'all. Is that, well, almost all the time the comments I hear is, whoa, I had no idea Jessica was this nice or funny or sarcastic or mean or whatever. But it's like, I'm happy to do it, like, for any of those comments, because it's nice that people actually are noticing. Well, she's not just a talking head.
Well, it's important that you, I mean, like, you know, my problem with G4 was, and I absolutely adored working there for the 4 years that I was there. I loved the group. I loved the channel. I loved the spirit of it. Obviously there were things that kept it from being the thing that it should be. There were bigger issues. It's very expensive to run a channel.
Very.
That's, you know, G4 never really made money because it's so expensive to run a channel. That's why Cops and Cheaters is on all the time. People always took that personally. Like, will they run Cops and Cheaters? Like, so that they can make Attack of the Show.
Yeah.
And they don't get many shots throughout the year for original programming just because of budget reasons. And so that's why the original programming was so scant.
Yeah.
But the thing about Attack of the Show, because when I left, I went and the pilot that I initially did for Comedy Central was not At Midnight. I pitched them a version of Attack of the Show where it was comedy was first and then information was second, and Attack was essentially CNN for the Geek Squad. So it was it was information first and then comedy stuff. The spirit of it was really fun, but ultimately it was a news program, and X Play was a news program, and so the comedy stuff couldn't get in the way of servicing the delivery of information. But I always kind of wanted that to flip. And it's like, no, it's a comedy show, but this is the source material.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, those approaches are philosophically slightly different. So that was always my thing with the show, is that comedy stuff would get cut because they had to service the information first.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think the media has changed, not only just because of the internet, but just specifically games media too, has just changed where things like G4, things like Spike with game trailers, even the websites like IGN and stuff have really had to adjust the way that they approach coverage, because it does cost a lot to try and support a channel on just one subject matter, basically. But then also from like the .com perspective, you know, all of these developers and publishers are realizing that they don't need to have the media to really release their own videos or, you know, they don't need to have the media to release exclusives. They don't need to have those reviews per se. They can reach their audience directly through social media, you know, everything, you know, GoPros, whatever. People, there's enough of all of that out there now that they can create their own content. And they probably could have done that with the last generation of consoles. For whatever reason, they didn't. But now they've caught on with this generation. And so I think everybody's having to make a change. And I think the thing that's going to really keep Nerdist apart from the others is personality.
Well, there's no question. You know, when I said this so many times, but the original MTV model was great when I worked there. Where there was basically just this like Justice League of personalities, and everyone kind of had their own thing, and that's why you watched. You didn't really care about seeing the same music videos over and over.
I still remember some of those names. Tabitha Soren
did news.
Was one.
She was news with Kurt Loder.
Yeah,
when I was there, it was Bill Bellamy, Kennedy.
I remember Bill Bellamy, yeah.
Who else was
Downtown there? Julie Brown, I remember.
She was there before me. There was Downtown Julie. There was Wubba 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 Julie Brown, and then there was Redheaded Julie Brown.
I remember Redheaded Julie Brown.
So Downtown Julie Brown was British and
Her too. Mm-hmm.
I almost reflexively said African British, or as they would say in England, she's black. It's actually more offensive when Americans try to be PC in England. Like, look at all these African Americans. They're like, oh, we're not fucking Americans, all right? It's actually more offensive to people who are not American. This idea of personality driving, and I think we're starting to have conversations more about, now that we know how to do this daily show with Nerdist News, how do we make it more editorial, and how do we make it more about your personality and your opinions as opposed to, because news is essentially, it's almost disposable in a weird way, because you can get, there's so many different places you can just get facts about things. And you guys have done such a great job of making about personality. So, you know, are you interested in doing and exploring more of that and being more of you and having more of an editorial take on stuff?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, you know, I think for one, Nerdist News, I'd like to see it keep going. I'd like to try and expand it more. I'd like to have like quick hit little bite sized nuggets of information where, like, if we have breaking news, maybe we do like a quickie little like breaking news that necessarily isn't held for Nerdist. It's Nerdist News. It's like its own little independent offshoot.
Sure.
Kind of like MTV when they had the MTV News updates, yeah, or whatever they call it. I can't remember the official name, but you know, they'd pop on mid show and give you the breaking news for whatever it was. They didn't necessarily wait till the next day.
I
think things like that would be really cool.
I have always had this dream and felt that Nerdist News should also have a foot on a television platform. And I know that, you know, I mean, it just because of the audience and everything, it's like, oh, maybe it should just be all digital. But I really just feel like it shouldn't be one or the other. But I feel like there should be a, like, I keep wanting to go to CNN and say,
yeah,
or someone, and just say, like, give us an hour, you know, like, give us an hour a week or give us a half hour a day to cover this, you know, because we can do it and yeah, you can do it. And we have all these, you know, now that we're starting to expand the group with Malik Forte and Dan Casey and mm-hmm, Brian Walton and Kyle Hill and, you know, that and Bowser, Andrew Bowser, that just like having this team cover this stuff in the voice and the way that we cover it, it really feels like that there should be a TV version of it. And so I'm really trying hard to figure out who the right place is.
Well, I certainly hope you find it, because that means...
Well, I have a couple...
That means
ideas.
A couple things for me. But, yeah, you know, the demographic is definitely... You know what I love most is actually... And this is going to sound like a... Oh, I just, but I really love the viewership. And I mean that sincerely, because if you look... When I was at IGN, we'd have... you know, in the comments section for our YouTube comments or whatever, even our IGN comment page, was just like boobs, you know, and
oh,
like,
did you say boobs?
Boobs, oh, yeah, yeah. Boobs, yeah. And just, you know, a lot of like immature stuff, which you just kind of learn to kind of let it go, roll off your back, and you've come to accept it, and just so that's the way the internet is. But I actually feel like we get legit feedback from commenters on Nerdist News.
Well, and
like a lot of back and forth and like real support. And it's weird. They like police themselves. If somebody starts getting a little ridiculous on there and getting like super racist or super sexist or super, or just nasty in general, like people check them.
Well, that's how you know that there's like a real quality to a show, is that when people care about it that much to sort of, to you know, foster it like a child you saw at a restaurant.
Yes, exactly.
Don't cry. But that there's something really special about it, and I filled in for you once, which was hilarious, because I did it and it went up, and like one of the first comments was like, who the fuck is this guy? And that tickled me so much. I laughed so hard at that, because what it meant to me was that you guys had created this thing that was, you know, because I always get confused with Nerdist, I mean, it's a weird. It's like it is my Twitter handle. It's my Instagram. I am that, but it's bigger than me. I mm-hmm. always wanted it to be bigger than me, and it was like one of those things. It was like, it's bigger than me. Yeah. This guy doesn't. He just thinks I'm some fucking idiot. You know, like the guy from Talking Dead came over to Nerdist News.
What's this guy doing here?
Yeah, and I was so. And actually, I was really. I almost thanked the guy. He would have no idea why, and I wouldn't have been sarcastic about it. But, you know, like just watching stuff kind of take on a life of their own, and, you know, but it's so important to keep infusing personality and growing it and making it your mm-hmm. voice. And so I just feel like there's still real value in television. I think with G4, it was buried in such a deep channel package
mm-hmm.
that the audience who would watch G4 is not going to pay extra to also get the golf channel or yeah. whatever else came with it. And so it just had bad placement. It was slightly inaccessible for the audience that it was going for.
Yeah. And yeah, a little bit, yeah.
So that's why I think putting it on some sort of mainstream television platform, but then still creating the digital content as bites or separately or exclusives or whatever. But I really want to see you guys. I really, 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 really want to get that on television somewhere.
I really want you to, too.
I know. I'm sure you
get
do.
Get on it.
I'm trying. But, it, you know, it really just takes the right television outlets. I'm going to say a brave and forward-thinking television outlet to look around and go, you know, because a lot of these grown-up news shows just cover things the way they cover them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm always fascinated because they always go like, oh, we don't have 18 to 34. We don't have the 18 to 30-year-old demographic. Like, yeah, because you have older people talking about these things in a way that their parents talk about them. Like, it's like they approach it from a very us and them type of thing. And it needs to be approached from a we. This is our us, not us and them, us and us.
It's this weird, I've noticed it's this weird where they want to touch upon the subject matter, but they just don't know how to speak about it. For whatever reason, that they're just not into it. They're just the age difference is too much. Whatever the case may be. I mean, did you see the Peter Molyneux tweet of, I can't remember what news outlet it was, but said like, Nintendo releases the PlayStation 4 or something crazy from this past E3 where it was completely the wrong information in the headline. And that just goes to prove like, they're trying to go for it, but they don't really know where they're going with it. And yet, I think they kind of dismiss it as well. It's this odd.
It's ridiculous that he didn't know that Nintendo released the Sega Dreamcast.
He's like, was that what it was?
No, I just made
it was something
thing.
Like, yeah, I think it was something like Nintendo releases the PlayStation 4, or has new PS4 games, and I'm like, what?
And who is he sending that to?
Like, it was in a newspaper.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and so Molyneux saw it and tweeted it out and was like, and this is the problem with general media covering events like this. That's why they should hit us up, because we actually know what we're talking about.
We have the production experience. We have the know-how. We know what we're fucking talking about. Come on, television.
And it's not a kid's, like, this is not a kid's necessarily hobby anymore. When you're selling game consoles at like $600 a pop and games at $60 a piece, you know, or AAA titles, however you want to, because you got your indies and they're a little cheaper, but you get my point. That's not just a child's hobby.
Well, it's not, and not only that, but I think, you know, the inherent value of, just like you said with your dad, that's how you guys bonded. That's
totally.
That's how Chloe and her dad bonded.
Yeah. Playing. But you always hear the shit stories about, oh, kids are shooting up because they play too much Call of Duty. Well, what about the father and daughter relationship that grew?
It all boils down to, you know, your responsibility as a parent.
Totally.
And video games can be amazing if you're a responsible parent, if you're engaged. If you're not a responsible parent, video games are not the thing that fucked your kid up. Something was going to get that kid sooner or later.
Whether it was
backward masking on record albums or or devil worship.
Elvis dancing in front of the television. Like, it's just, I'll never be the person that says, and I stick with this. I will stick with this till the day that I die. There is no excuse for parents to complain about games giving their children bad ideas to go do awful things because there are parental controls on the consoles. There are parental controls built into your TVs now. There are warning labels on all of your games. You have to have a license to even purchase them. Yes, probably your children, if they really wanted to go out there and get it, will find it. But if they're trying that hard to get on something you've told them no to multiple times and you have no idea what the hell is going on, then that lies in your lap.
Well, I also,
nobody else's.
I also feel like, you know, things like games, things are inherently neutral. They don't have any value except for the value that people place on them. So if someone has the right value system going into something, they're not going to interpret that thing as, this is what I should go, you know, like, they're just, they need the right value system in place in order to process those things. Because my parents let me watch all kinds of stuff when I was a kid, and all sorts of, like, the reason I became obsessed with stand-up is because I didn't have any, my parents didn't censor. I mean, like, I couldn't watch porn.
Yeah.
But, although my dad did let me watch a nudie movie when I was in, like, 14 years old. But anyway, he's dead now, so you can't get mad at him. Well, you can't get mad. It's not going to do anything.
Yeah, nothing's going to happen.
But just the idea that, you know, if you have good values going into something, it doesn't mean that you're going to take it in a, you know, you're probably going to take it in a better direction than if you didn't. But, you know, I'm talking out of the side of my face because I don't have kids, so I don't know.
Just to play devil's advocate, I've only had one time where I've played a game that I walked out and was like, the first thing I saw were targets, and that would be Grand Theft Auto. And I had been playing, it was Grand Theft Auto 4, the one with Nico Bellic, that was 4, right? And I was in San Francisco, and for whatever reason, it just really just all perfectly aligned itself. And I walked out after playing like a huge amount of it at out of my apartment and looked around and was like, I literally saw targets. Like, oh, if I did this, this would happen.
And that's when you went on the killing
spree. And that's when I was like, whoa. Now I can kind of see the angle of that argument, but still, you have the morals in check because you were raised properly. That's what stopped me from going and getting. And also the fact that I'm 30-something years old and I can play a game like that and know the difference between right and wrong.
I was shooting portal holes and things, you know, for a long time.
It's just, you know, you just start thinking about that.
You start thinking in portals.
Yeah.
That's what happens. Mm-hmm. So what were you excited to see coming out of E3?
Oh, the Order. What is it? The Order 1886. I'm loving this like early 1900s vibe that everybody seems to be picking up on. And I love the fact, Final and maybe shot. I'm going to get this wrong, but when I first saw the trailer, I was like, God damn it, zombies a fucking Ken. And then he morphed into a werewolf and I was like, what? That's exactly what the sound I made, actually, by the way. And I probably blew everybody's ears out with that one. Sorry, Katie.
I mean, just in terms of that early 1900s aesthetic, like, I'm so bummed that I've finished all the BioShock games because it's just...
It's so good.
It's a world I just want to go hang around in.
Come join me in the Order. It's like a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen video game. That's what it looks like. I haven't gotten any hands on. Well, you know, I actually kind of like the movie. Come on, you guys.
Dr. Jekyll, I presume. Do you really? Do you really, really, though?
Yeah, a little bit.
To cap off Sean Connery's career.
Sean is not why I was watching.
Should have been great. Could have been great.
I really liked, what's his name? That used to be Charlize Theron's boyfriend, husband. They never actually got married, but they were dating forever.
Tony Danza?
No.
Oh, I wanted to be that.
I know. He was Lestat in The Queen of the Damned. That's like his... That's seriously his two movies that I am aware of.
Why don't I know this actor's name?
Yeah. The minute... It's gonna... You're gonna be like, oh!
LXG.
But anyway, he played... Stuart Townsend, and he played Dorian Gray in the movie, and I really like the idea of Dorian Gray.
You know, it is, you know, like,
his body and Stuart Townsend.
That idea of the
saving that tight vagina. What?
basically the Laugh Olympics of steampunk, superhero, like fictional characters. Fucking, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was great, but I. Like once a year, I fucking watch Underworld and Underworld.
Underworld's
2.
Great,
it
man.
It is great, and I even like Underworld 2. It gets a little weird after that,
Rise.
Yeah, the Rise of Lycans.
Yeah,
is
I
pretty,
skipped that one.
Weird.
Well, I mean, I saw it, but I didn't like it.
And then there was the one where Celine has the baby that she had with Michael, but he's not. Scott Speedman's not in the movie. But then they're just
that's
tracking.
Trying to do a little bit of Twilight, just put their toe in the water.
Yeah. Oh, I don't remember. I don't even think I saw that one.
Well,
I
Underworld
only saw
Awakening.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw the first one, the second one. I saw Rise of Lycans, and that's where I cut it off. And it was like, no.
The second one's really funny because I do like it. I do like it a lot. I do like the whole evolution thing. I liken it to. I like this whole Alexander Corvinus. I like that. I like all the steampunk shit. I think it's great, but it's obvious that they had story problems because there are so many points in that movie where they're just the exposition is just in the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Where they go to see basically the historian Tanis, and they're in his exile, and he's like, and then he goes, and so he knew that the location, and he knew that the exact location of this thing would be in your blood, and this is the key. Like everything is. But it's just when he says, and therefore the exact location.
Like, oh, come on.
Just in case you had any doubt.
Why don't you just fucking hold a spoon to the fucking camera when you're talking? I still enjoy it. I still enjoyed it a whole lot. And fucking Bill Nighy, come on. Who doesn't love. Not Bill Nighy, Bill Nighy. Nighy?
I
don't know.
I think they're just both. It's a homonym situation.
No, it's Bill Nighy, and then I think Bill Nighy. Nighy. Like, it's if you're Australian and you say Bill Nye, that's to say Nye. Nye.
I believe you.
Bill Nye is the most interesting way of talking. Like, it's this. I've never heard anyone with a cadence like Bill Nye.
Good impression.
Oh. I loved you like a daughter, but I cannot protect you. Like, it's the strangest. And then she's trying to explain, like, oh, but I had to bring you back because Craven's up to all this crazy shit. And he's like, oh,
oh. Wait, is that the one with the baby? Because I did see that one.
No, the baby is number four, okay. I think. Baby's number four. Rise of the Lycans is like the
that was the mom and, yeah, Celine's like mom or whatever.
3D one that they just shot to make a 3D one.
Oh, mm. God. Why? I've never seen it. Anyway, we got off on a weird underworld tangent.
Yeah.
I'm real
so,
sorry.
So, yes, The Order. And I really want to play Alien Isolation.
Are you...
I didn't get to play it on the Morbius. I want to so bad. I just, like, pooped a little.
What? Just now?
Just now. Like, a little turtling just poked out. Just out of excitement.
The concept of playing that Morbius is, like, give you like...
Little turtle head.
Slight turtling.
Just a, like, literally just a little nose part. Beep.
And then back in.
And then back in. And it's like...
Oh, not yet, not yet.
Oh, Morbius.
Not yet. I'm not ready. But soon there will be a reckoning.
So yeah, that one too.
This was fun. What else do you what else do you want to see happen with Nerdist News, and what can I do to help manifest that? But obviously besides the television part, which I'm working on.
Well, you know, I think right now while we found our voice, you know, it's we're still trying to grow the viewership. And so that's, I think, our biggest struggle is just trying to let people know that we're there, that we're fun, like you want to tune into us. You know, it's always hard being the new kid on the block. I know. I forced
but
myself
got the
not
right
to
stuff.
Do that. But we so do. Bye. We do have the right stuff, damn
love
it.
The way you say the news.
And so, yeah. That's probably the challenge we're up against right now, is just to get more eyeballs, which I think will come with time, and also with some really good, consistent, awesome hosting by yours truly. But then also, like, you know, just making some deals, getting some coverage. Yeah. I'd love to do some exclusives. I'd love to get a little bit more, because I'm into it, so, you know, games coverage. But mm-hmm. We've got Malik doing his stuff, so that'll come with time, I think. I thought the E3 coverage was definitely a step in the right direction to, like, really put ourselves out there as this is something we'll take seriously and continue to take seriously.
Well, it's kind of fun because, you know, at G4, you're basically... I mean, at G4, you're somewhat of a segment producer as the host, because you still have to... You know, it's such a bare-bones operation, especially mm-hmm. when you're doing remote stuff, that you really do... You did help kind of shape the material, but it must be fun to actually be you're legitimately a producer on this thing, in terms of, like, it's your...
Yeah.
You are all carrying out this vision.
I mean, I feel like everybody's kind of the producer on it, because everybody has really valid pros and cons to things that we do, and we all work together to really figure out what the best meshing of it would be. And I've had a lot of fun working with everybody. It reminds me a lot of when I first started, where you're super excited, you're super stoked, everything is awesome, everything is fun, you know. But the bonus to that I didn't have when I started is that I come with experience now, and all the people that we have on staff come with experience. So it's not like we're just wildly trying to find our way and see what sticks. There's actually a battle plan that we can, you know, adhere to, and if we need to change it, we can, without there being any major upsets. And so there's really, like, very little ego, which is great. There's very little, it's like all team building. It's awesome.
Well, I think, you know, with YouTube, it's the challenging part about YouTube is that, because it's essentially a crowdsourced platform, so it doesn't, you know, your core audience is there.
Yeah,
you've sort of found the hardcores, and it will incrementally grow over time.
Yeah,
because that's just
the
more you do it, the more consistency.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes, you know, YouTube, I think, is a platform of superlatives, and so it's like the best this or the craziest this, because ultimately, the stuff that pops the most on YouTube is shared the most. And so someone might watch Nerdist News and go, this was great, but may not necessarily go, I have to send this to everyone I know.
Yeah.
And if your core audience decided they needed to send it to everyone they knew, you would see, I think, you know, the order is magnitude in the, but it's just about, you know, if you like something on YouTube, it's helpful if you want it to continue to share that thing with people, because it just, every time it's not just liking something, it's like, it's a share.
Yeah.
Every time you share something with someone, it just gives it a little bit of a boost, you know? And then when that happens, it goes up a little bit in the YouTube rating system so that it shows up more in the sidebar. It's, you know, so it's not just likes, but it's really shares that are the kind of the most, that's the lifeblood of that's YouTube. Like, that's what makes it work. Because people don't just, in the old days, people just go to YouTube.com and be like, what's in store for me today? But YouTube got rid of all that. So it's, you know, now you have these tailor-made homepages that tell you a bunch of shit you probably already like. So it doesn't, like, the sharing mechanism, you know, like, that falls on the user. And so you can't, that's a very hard thing to control.
Yeah. Do like kindergarten and learn how to share.
Share.
Sharing is caring.
We did a lot of good sharing today.
We did. We really did. You guys know a lot about me now.
We do know a lot about you.
A lot about me.
I didn't really say anything that personal.
I mean.
Is there anything you want to know about me before? I'll...
Yeah.
Okay.
Anal? Not as in, do you want to do it to me, but I'm asking, have you ever done it?
When you asked that question, I thought you were like...
like, hey, proposition?
No, I thought you were asking me, like, can I put something in your butt?
No. I also found that sounded like that, so I decided to shift that.
Have I ever done anal? I don't think...
You don't think? We'll just leave it at that. Maybe. I think that's maybe your best answer.
Well, I've never had anything up mine. I've never had anything up there. That's never happened. But I feel like maybe when I was like 19, my girlfriend at the time was like, let's try it. And then immediately was like, abort. So I don't.
Oh, like, oopsies.
You know, I think it immediately was like, oh, yeah, this isn't a thing that I'm ready to undertake. And so I've never really pursued it because I largely think that it's I feel like if someone really is into that, they would say, hey, please do this.
Yeah.
And not, hey, can I do this to you? Because there's an 85% chance that you're gonna want to do it, and it's not pleasurable or enjoyable. And so so I don't know.
All right, so serious question. Compared to your experiences at G4, doing the Nerdist channel, you're coming across a lot of problems that maybe or benefits that you didn't expect or knew even existed on the production side of things?
The production side of things, I feel like we have down pretty well because we have a fucking amazing team. Our head of production, Seth Lederman's amazing. We have a bunch of, you know, we have a bunch of great people like Mike Shaw and Andrew Bowser and a bunch of people and Jacob Strunk. And it just like, we have great editors. We have great shooters. We have great, you know, we just have great content creators. And I think one of the things that I'm, you know, really, really proud of about the company is I don't know how much it has to do with me, but just there's something about the spirit of it that it attracts really good people. And it attracts really good people who seem to give a big shit about it. Like they seem to really care about this thing.
Everybody at the office is very passionate.
That we're making. And I mean, and that's what I love, the spirit of that, because that's the most important thing. I mean, it really is the most important thing. If, you know, I'm sure it's a grind for people because it just is. It's fucking work.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the fact that people seem to care about it and hopefully have the creative freedom to kind of express themselves, I do my best not to micromanage people. It's like, oh, if this is your vision, then do what that's, you know, better than I do. I know what I would do, but that doesn't mean it's the right thing. You know, it's just a great collection of really cool people. I mean, but, you know, challenges are the same challenges that G4 had, but just on a smaller scale, which is it costs money to give away free content.
Yeah.
So how do sponsorships figure in? Well, sponsorships figure in, you know, when subscribers are higher and viewership is, you know, higher and shares are higher and engagement's higher. And so then you're constantly in this race where you're just nosing a little bit ahead. And it's like, oh, you know, the sponsorships got bigger so we can do bigger stuff. Or this happened, so we just moved a little bit forward.
Yeah.
And so it really is that idea of, you know, not, you don't want to sell out just to have sponsors and money. I mean, I really just don't think about it that way.
Yeah.
But you still want to be able to scale up so that you can reach the widest audience possible, so that you can continue to make the thing that you love. And that's really what it is. It's the everyday, you know, I'm sure at G4 it was, I'm sure they did love it, but there was this sort of like, it is our duty, because we are hired to do this, to keep this channel on the air.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's a slightly different philosophical approach, which is how long and how much can I continue to facilitate the making of things that I enjoy, or the things that people enjoy making. And unfortunately, you know, money drives that engine in a lot of ways, because that's how you get to make the stuff you like, and that's how you get it out to more people.
It's a vicious circle.
So I think the trick is to not try to scale up too fast, so that you're not trapped by the financial aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's hopefully, I mean, I think everything we do has been an organic outgrowth of everything else. The website begat many contributors, that begat a podcast, which begat a podcast network, which begat a video channel, which begat many shows, which begat Nerdist News, and now a television production entity. And it wasn't just like, let's do all this at once.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, we're doing this. Why couldn't we do this? Oh, we're able to do that.
Was that always your master plan, or did this come as a surprise and you just saw the opportunity and then jumped on board?
I think it was both. In the beginning, it really was, I'm going to start a blog about things that I care about, because performer blogs are dumb. And they just say, like, here's where I'm performing.
Yeah.
And then your bio. And I was sort of, I had just sort of started, who's podcasting whom now? I had just kind of had this idea in 2007 that I was only going to work on stuff that I cared about.
Uh-huh.
'Cause I have this much experience, and I have comedy experience and hosting experience, but I was never really pursuing the types of content that I wanted. So I said, I'm only going to do the kind of this content that I want. And a way to do that is, I'm going to start a blog, and it's going to be about me, in the sense that it's about all these things that I like. There just so happens to be this parallel in my mind, like this parallel pop culture movement that was growing at the time. And so it wasn't that I was like, oh, all this nerd shit's popular now. It's just that I realized, like, all these things that I would not have been able to do 5 years ago because it would have been considered too niche.
Yeah.
Now I think I can actually do it and reach enough people that might give a fuck about it. And so that's really all it was. And at the time, I always envisioned that someday there's going to be, like, you know, a specific tech Nerdist and a specific game Nerdist and a specific this, that I always wanted to be bigger than me.
Yeah.
Or bigger than I, if I'm being grammatically.
I'm never sure how that works.
I believe it's bigger than I. Because I think ultimately you're saying it's bigger than I would be big.
Okay.
But I'm sure if that's not true, maybe someone on the internet will correct me.
Jessica, would you say Jessica and I are going to the store, or Jessica and me are going to the store?
You would say I, because if you lose Jessica, you would just say I am going to the store.
Going to the store.
You wouldn't say me, I'm going to the store, unless you're a Bigfoot.
Okay.
And so I always wanted it to, but then just, as with anything, what I realize is, like, you know, once you start down a path and once you make a decision and once you have some focus and direction, that the most important thing about starting it and being consistent is that along the way, all answers just start revealing themselves to you. And so it's like when I put the call out for more contributors, like 500 people submitted, and I had to hire someone to help go through the submissions. And
oh, pick, nice. Like,
and then I had my friend Perry Simon, who I used to work with in radio. Like, he's a brilliant, he's just brilliant. So I was like, can I pay you to edit? And he said, sure. And then I started the podcast, and I'm like, well, I'll just link that. You know, I'll just keep everything the same name. It's the same voice. It's the same general idea. And it just all started, you know, it's like water level. When one kind of rose, they all sort of, you know, because they were all connected.
Mm-hmm.
But having G4 as a television platform was very helpful, because they weren't really paying me that much there, and so I had a lot of freedom. And so part of the deal was, just let me promote my thing.
Yeah.
And they did. And that helped.
Yeah.
So, you know, it really was just trying to see, like, stepping back every once in a while and go, how do these things connect? This connects to TV this way. This is the podcast. If we do more of this, this can connect back to the website. Let's pitch this thing. This can be that. And,
yeah. It's like playing a game.
It's exactly playing a game.
Yeah. You're playing a game. You're playing the game of life.
I'm playing SimCity.
Yeah, you are.
SimCity was one of my favorite games. I played it on Will Wheaton's fucking PowerBook in 1992.
2 maybe or 3, like just this black and white version of SimCity mm-hmm. on his PowerBook, and it was always one of my favorite games. And so that is, you know, so the soul of Nerdist is a game. It's based on a re-expression of a game that I loved when I was growing up.
Yeah. I think anybody that's fortunate enough to work with what they love is playing that game. That's why they're into it, is that they start moving the pieces and all this. They try to find which piece fits best in which slot.
It's resource building.
Yeah.
It's resource. You break ground, you put in the pipes, you put in the electricity, totally. You put in a house, you put in a train station, you put in an industrial zone.
And it just grows.
And it just starts growing. And then you build another town, you connect those by a fucking highway, and then you put in the airport and the Space Needle. You know, like, it's fucking great.
Yep. Totally agree.
So that's ultimately, I ended this podcast by talking a lot about myself, but just to answer your question, that I had a vision to make it bigger. I obviously didn't see the specific ways, but all of the things, I mean, I would make plans and I would write down, this is what I want and this is what I want to see. There's something really interesting and powerful, and it's not, I'm not mystical about this, but there's something about when you write things down, when you write your goals down and you write down how you see them in detail playing out and why they're important to you, and you give them sort of an emotional reason why they're important to you, mm-hmm. something weird happens. Like I found old notes from like 5-6 years ago that I had forgotten about, just lists of things. I'm like, oh, I'm doing that. I did that. I did that. That happened. This happened and more. Like, it's fucking crazy.
Yeah, I don't do the lists. I should do the lists because I would be much more organized. I don't do the lists, but I do. It has occurred to me now that enough time has passed in my life that I'm able to like look back and really see some significant changes in like where the crosses had occurred. That I'm like, oh, that thing that I dreamt about wanting to do growing up at this particular point has happened. It came true. And then when I hit that point and I dreamt another dream of doing a step above that, oh, that's happened. And then, you know, and I'm just, it's weird. You can just literally follow the path.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, goals, I think, are just this is like a flag. It's like it's a roadmap. It's not, well, it's roadmaps. And it doesn't have to be exactly that goal.
Yeah.
But it just gives you something to aim for. And you can be, you know, you can be flexible. You can change your mind. You can take a right turn if you want to. You mm-hmm. can abandon it if it's like, if you start doing it, you go, oh, this is not fun. But ultimately, like, having some type of guidance system or structure in place is very, very helpful. Because it just sort of, you know, it just sort of keeps you on track. And it helps. When I decided that I only wanted to work in this sphere of stuff that I loved,
mm-hmm.
it instantly cut off a lot of other stuff that I otherwise would have wasted my time on just trying to survive.
Gotcha.
So it was easy to say no to certain things.
Yeah.
You know, I could have hosted a million like home and garden shows. Like I used to get offers to host, and I used to go no, because it's not about the thing that I love. And ultimately, you know, I gotta live with
it. That's a ballsy move.
Well, it was, but then it's not at the same time. I almost think it's riskier to do it the other way. Because when you have focus and direction, you're gonna find, like, you'll find those opportunities. But when you're just directionless, then you're just trying to pull from anything in the world, which is just too much. Like, you need focus. You need focus. And it gave me very specific focus. And, you know, And I wanted it to be about shit I cared about, because you have to live with it every day. And
absolutely.
It's, you can't, you can fake it for like a year. Maybe you could fake it for 6 months or a year, but after a while, if you fucking hate, if you don't like
it, nobody will pay you enough to make you happy.
No. And because even if you don't
sabotage
it.
Although I'm not against trying. I'm totally not. I just want to throw that one out there. But yeah.
Even if you don't totally sabotage it, you'll just get bored with it and your attention will get pulled somewhere else, because that's just what you do. But when you really love your, when you really love what you're doing, you work 7 days a week because you just want to you just want to make it happen.
See, I feel like I'm at that crossroads now where I could probably have a good, maybe another 5 years hosting, maybe. Just because I'm getting older, you know, and women's shelf life's a lot shorter, especially in this particular industry. And so I don't.
That sucks.
I'm not looking at it as in a defeatist manner. I'm trying to look at it as a realistic possibility of that happening. But if it doesn't, I'm thrilled. You know, I'm kind of the person where I'm I make myself aware of the thing that could potentially not go the way that I want, so that if it doesn't go the way that I want, I'm not disappointed. I expected that. But if it goes the way that I want, because I'll keep on working towards succeeding.
Sure.
Then I'm extra, extra happy because I did it. So it's this, it's a way of protecting myself.
Protecting your emotions.
Disappointment. But realistically, in 5 years, you know, I mean, hey, if I can host, awesome, that's great, and I'll keep doing it, but probably not. So what am I going to do? And that's where I'm finding myself now, is where do I want to go? Because I don't ever want to leave the gaming industry, or the, for lack of a better phrase, the quote-unquote nerd industry or geek industry. I love this stuff. It's just, where in that do I want to find my part two of my career?
Right.
So,
well, I think a lot of that, you know, I think male or female, it's important too. And one of the things why Nerds is very important to me was just creating something that will live on, hopefully, beyond when I can be of service to it.
Yeah.
It really is, instead of being a hired gun where you have not a lot of control, whether someone's going to, why they're going to pick you, or what job's going to come along. It's the idea of like being the creator yourself. So you just have more control over what you're doing, and you just have, you know, more control over your destiny. So I, you know, for me, that was kind of the thing. 'Cause I didn't know if I was ever going to get hired again to host anything or, you know, do anything. So.
Yeah, it's weird. Everybody always asks me, like, why don't you become an actress? And one, I can't act. But if I could, the answer to that with two is, I don't like that feeling of walking into a room to audition and having some stranger make a decision on me and my skill set or my personality in like 2 seconds. Or even something as shallow as, oh, we just don't like the way she looks. Like, I could not do that in a million years. It would drive me nuts.
It's no fun. I remember those days.
Yeah.
I'm so glad they're
even
over.
Hosting, you get that a little bit. I don't think as much maybe as acting, but
yeah, no, but when you walk into a room for hosting, I'm sure you have a pretty strong sense of like, this is what I do.
Yeah.
For
you know what I'm here for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For me, it got to a point where I was like, this is what I do. I'm going to do this audition the way that I would do the job. I'm not going to do it the way I think you want it. That might be what you want. I don't know. But if I'm going to do it the way I want to do it, because if you don't want that, then I'm not your guy.
Yeah.
You know? So
I actually think the better for anybody starting off in hosting or acting, if that's the mentality you walk in with, you're the better for it. I think it's going to save you a lot of mental anguish.
I agree. Because if you do get the job, in your best case scenario, but then you don't get to be yourself, then, you know, I mean, again, you could fake it for a while, but then after a few years... I know this sounds crazy, but the money doesn't matter if you're not happy. It just doesn't matter if you're not happy doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, it was wonderful talking to you.
Nice talking to you.
Great job on Nerdist News.
Thanks.
You know, we'll keep at it and keep driving people to it. And hopefully, if an intelligent television platform out there feels like they want to, in my opinion, not even really take a risk on some of the biggest things that people pay attention to, like video games and this specific sector of entertainment and comics and science and all those things, then don't be a pussy.
Then hit us up. Do you ever want to be on my podcast?
Of course I'll be on your podcast.
Do you have scary stories?
I have scary stories. Your Scary Sweet. Stories podcast.
My Scary Stories podcast.
Which is starting soon, where people come on and tell ghost stories.
Yeah, basically.
Or scary stories.
Well, personal weird effed up crazy stories.
Yeah.
It could be UFOs. It could be conspiracy theories. It could be paranoia. Yeah, it could be ghosts. It could be hauntings. It could be whatever you want it to be, as long as it's weird.
My friends and I used to sit in this bar when I used to, when alcohol was my blood. And, We would tell the fucking kinds of ghost stories where just this like table full of dudes, would you just start tearing up a little bit? You're like, oh, fuck, no, shit,
that's
no,
perfect.
No. Like I've got some stories like that.
Perfect.
All right,
I'm going to be hitting you up.
All righty. Scary stories? Nerdist News?
Nerdist News, it's actually called Spooky Shit.
Oh, Spooky Shit, not Scary Stories.
Not, well,
they are scary
they
stories.
They are scary stories.
But Spooky Shit.
But it's called Spooky Shit.
And Nerdist News and Jessica_Chobot on Twitter.
No, that's been changed.
When?
Yesterday.
Well, this is news.
I got my full name back.
So you're just
Squatter
Jessica Chobot.
Squatter be damned. I am now just at Jessica Chobot.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm very proud of myself. It only took 7 years.
You know, I often call Chloe Klobot. She'd be like, that's really close to Chobot. I go, I know, but...
But it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't help it.
Let me make sure that this is not my kid. So, yeah. Oh, it's my husband.
All right. Oh, okay. Put him on speakerphone.
I was going to say, let me put him on speakerphone. Get out. Babe?
Hey.
Hey, you're on speakerphone with Chris.
And you're being recorded for a podcast.
Ha!
Wait a minute.
Ironically enough, we didn't talk about your penis today.
Oh, yeah, hold the microphone.
Oh, sorry, I gotta hold it up. Sorry.
Can I ask him about the thing that you said about when you guys met and he kept saying to you and you didn't believe him?
Yeah, absolutely, go ahead.
Hey, Blair, is it true that when you first met Chobot and she didn't really want to have anything to do with you in a romantic way, that you would every once in a while go, you know I'm gonna fuck you, right?
Yeah, I can confirm that. She didn't even paraphrase that. That's verbatim.
What gave you such confidence, Blair?
I think at that point it was just desperation. Knowing that I would never do any better, so I just continued to throw myself at her until she finally said yes.
Good. You just earned some points, my friend.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I don't interrupt the podcast, guys. Jess, I was just wondering when I could start barbecue because I'm starving.
Oh, go ahead, babe. I'll be there soon. We're just wrapping up.
Yeah, we're all going to come over.
We're going to go eat barbecue.
Right now, come over.
Bring it over the whole podcast audience. Oh,
you guys want to come?
Hey,
yeah,
Blair,
I got enough.
Why don't you tell people to enjoy their burrito at the end of the podcast?
Hey, guys, do me a favor and please enjoy your burrito.
Blair Herder! Woo! Jessica Chobot! Power couple!
Bye, awesome babe. People.
Bye, sweetie. Right.
I'll be home. Love
hey,
you.
Blair, I'm totally going to fuck you.
I love you too, Chris, in a different way, but I still love you.
Well, I'm totally going to fuck you.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Totally going to fuck him.
I'm cool with that. Okay. We actually have a deal.
Oh.
Not with you specifically. Not with you specifically, but he's always been like, I don't want to be in a three-way, but if you could just get with a girl so I can watch it, I'd be really cool. And I'm like, listen, here's the deal. If you want me to get with a girl, I'm cool with that, but then... you gotta let a dude suck your dick. And I get to watch. If this is the give and take, that's what it is.
Okay, wait. So let me ask you, what?
So you would be sucking some cock.
Oh, what do I get out of that?
Blair Herder's cock in your mouth. Yeah.
Is that what he meant by making?
And possibly those itchy balls that he's been talking about.
Oh yeah. Wait. So would the payment have to come first? Would do you just suck the dick and get out of the way? No. But does he just suck the dick and get it out of the way so then he can enjoy your thing, or is like does he make you do your thing first and then you're like, all right, and then he keeps putting it off like jury duty? Oh, can I put it off like jury duty until like Thanksgiving week or something?
I don't know. You know, we actually have never thought of that, but that is definitely something to work out.
Okay. Well, you guys work it out. Yeah. We'll talk about it.
Work it out.
Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
The end. I'm not going to suck for her dick.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.